Good morning. Welcome into the program. Bill Ryder with you. Hope you had a marvelous weekend. We have a marvelous show planned for you, and that's not because Ryan Hickey's gone. I am not suggesting in any way the show gets markedly better when the new executive producer is gone. We've got Nico Scarlatos. He's here. What is it? At Nico, at Scar 10? And Scar 10. I got it. NSCAR 10. When you follow something, you don't have to memorize it. I'm on their sports writer, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. A lot of things to unpack over the next 2 hours. The Chicago Bears, oh, God help me. My Chicago Bears have extended their general manager. Despite his lackluster record, 15-36 over his tenure, we'll get into what that means. Home Run Derby is tonight. I'm going to try my best to lean into some open-mindedness about that event. Wimbledon ushered in perhaps a new golden era for men's tennis and for women's tennis, for the Americans in particular. I think it's one of the most brutal things I've ever seen in sports. Certainly one of the most brutal things I've ever seen in sports that I did not have a rooting interest in. I would put Bartman ahead of it and some other moments. As a Missouri fan, you probably have your own heartache from your teams. But just as a dude watching sports, what happened at the women's final in London was hard to process. We'll talk about that. Miles Turner has made a change, as you know. He is a Milwaukee Buck, not a Pacer. He was officially introduced to his team. Some interesting comments there. And we'll try to decode that a little bit for you. My buddy, I'm really excited. I have not had this guy on the show before. Akeem Dermish, outstanding CBS Sports HQ anchor. Huge Cavs and LeBron fan. So I'm about to talk about LeBron and not be nice. Akeem will offer a little bit of, not nice is inaccurate. I'm going to accurately say things that will come off as critical of LeBron James. Akeem's a big LeBron fan, so we'll get a different view in an hour. We'll do buy or sell. A lot of things to unpack. All right, phone number, by the way, if you want to call in, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476, 888-710-4ISN. Two bits of news, two fairly significant reports, one a longer story, the other just breaking news, out since we last spoke here on Ryder Than You about LeBron James. And I am going to tell you what it means. I'm going to interpret for you LeBron James' brutal reality that he is facing at 40 and a half years old in the NBA, the first time he has ever faced the fact that he's no longer the main character. And you can interpret this however you want through your perspective on LeBron James. People love him. People hate him. I get it. For me, certainly outside of Brian Windhorst, there aren't many other people who have spent more time covering LeBron. I mean, Brian's mother taught LeBron James sex education in high school, so I'm going to have trouble competing against that. But I've covered LeBron since 2010. I know him. I know the people around him. He's been nice to me. He's been hard on me. I've certainly been both those things. I'm going to tell you what this means. And what it means is that LeBron James is facing the thing that all-time greats always eventually face, the end of their dominance in whatever way that they've known it. And guys, stars, athletes react differently to those things. And LeBron has had, and this isn't about whether he's the GOAT or not the GOAT. He probably is. I don't want him to be either, all right? But he probably is. He's certainly one of the two best players of all time. It's him or Mike, whatever. Point is, what I'm about to tell you isn't about whether I put him over Mike or I don't. LeBron has had more power than any athlete perhaps in the history of sports. I'm talking pure, unadulterated control. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One, when Mike was doing his thing, when Kobe began his thing, when Tim Duncan was doing his thing, obviously when Kareem was doing his thing, or when Tiger started out, you want to go to different sports, Tom Brady, we didn't live in a social media era where you could inundate people with information. And if you're good at it, if you're good at media control, media spin, media manipulation, LeBron James is, whatever you think of him, he is. You didn't have the tools to control things. You didn't have the tools to go find, like Nick Wright. I'm not mad at Nick. Nick would take offense to this, whatever. LeBron James did an amazing job, or his people, having Nick Wright carry water for him. And Nick Wright's a really talented guy who's made a lot of money on that. But that didn't happen in the same way with the same impact back in the day. LeBron is at the focal point. He is the guy who pushed. He's the catalyst for player power in the NBA. Good for him. And by the way, LeBron gets credit. LeBron created a world where players have a massive amount of power. It is not a coincidence. These contracts that we're seeing, these extensions, they're going to be $70, $80 million. Then in a few years, it'll be $100 million. LeBron James did that. It is not a coincidence that in the LeBron James era, in which he controlled everything, that the players went from getting about 39 or 40% of all the money to half the money. It's called BRI. You don't care. Point is, the wealth that has flowed into the coffers of the Players Association, distributed by contracts, is a LeBron player power control thing. And LeBron didn't abuse that the way other guys do. I mean, let's give him some credit before we point out that he's thrown a massive diva tantrum because things have changed for him. A lot of people have looked at the player power that LeBron created, have found that power to be really seductive, and have said, get me out of here. I don't care about my contract. I'm going so. I mean, Kevin Durant is a serial, I love it here, just kidding, it's been a year, I want out. LeBron has never forced his way out of a team. I know he was obnoxious when he left Cleveland. He was a free agent. LeBron also just internally, his abilities, his willingness, when his contract was up, his willingness to go somewhere else, the savviness, and I know this because I covered him, with which he manipulates, attacks, leans on people, man, in every team he's ever been in, including the Lakers, until just about 12 seconds ago, he was in charge. They will bristle at that. They will tell you not, it's not true. It is true. It's always been true. Part of the reason LeBron left the Miami Heat is because he wasn't in charge to the extent that he wanted. His first year, he tried to get Eric Spoelstra fired. He had a different guy named Chris Broussard. Remember him? Carrying water for him at the time. Taking shots at Spoelstra. That was a LeBron operation. And when they wouldn't do everything LeBron wanted, he went to Cleveland. In Cleveland, I won't give you the litany of all the examples, but my God, Timothy Mozgov for two first-round picks, J.R. Smith, and obviously in L.A., this has been the reality. And the shocking way in which this has come to an end was illustrated by this great ESPN report over the weekend. Brian Windhorst, Ramona Shelburne reporting, came out Friday, Saturday, a pretty detailed feature reporting piece on how the power dynamic has shifted in Los Angeles. And there were some interesting anecdotes in there. They talked about a fancy schmancy Beverly Hills restaurant. I live in L.A. that I would never be allowed in. I don't even know where it is. I think people like me aren't even allowed to look at past it if we go by in our Ubers, in our Prius-I. Prius? What is Prius plural? I used to have two. And at that lunch, at that dinner, Luka Doncic shows up. Luka Doncic's agent, manager shows up. Rob Pelinka, as you know, the GM of the Lakers, shows up, and J.J. Redick, the handpicked coach of LeBron James, by the way, shows up to plot the future. Do you know who did not show up? LeBron James wasn't invited. And this story kind of goes through the ways in which they're understandably going to build around Luka over LeBron, how LeBron's put out. Here was the thing in there that was really telling, and it was, I'm sure, a slap in the face to LeBron, and that explains all the things that have happened in the last few months as LeBron has thrown a tantrum. The statement that Rich Paul put out right after LeBron picked up his almost $3 million player option, we may not want to be here, is basically what it said. We're going to evaluate. Why would LeBron pick up his option then cause trouble? Because he's throwing a tantrum. Why would LeBron leak that he's unhappy? Because he's throwing a tantrum. Why did Dave McMenamin, and it sounds like I'm taking shots at these guys, and I'm not. Dave McMenamin is very good at his job, very successful. But Dave's the guy that reported in the last 24 hours that four teams have reached out and inquired about LeBron James. Let me give you some insight on Dave. And Dave's, again, really good at his job, okay? Great at his gig. We all have to sort of carry water for different sources. LeBron has been covered by Dave McMenamin forever. Dave was in Cleveland, had to move to Cleveland, Ohio to cover LeBron. Didn't want to be there, wanted out. Wants to reach out to me about a job. Do you have anything at FoxSports.com? No, I don't. Really, I don't really know Dave that well, but I did him a huge favor by not having anything for him. Because he got to come back to L.A. and cover LeBron. The point is, when Dave McMenamin reports that there are four teams that have reached out inquiring to the Lakers about trading for LeBron James, what is the Mavs and the Warriors, I'm forgetting a few, it doesn't even matter. That is coming from LeBron's camp. In the same report, Dave McMenamin says, well, LeBron hasn't asked Rich Paul to facilitate a trade. No, but he certainly asked Rich Paul or done it himself to just leak to you there's interest. Why? Because LeBron's throwing a tantrum. Because LeBron's being a diva. And the big reason we know this, the big slap in the face of LeBron James, and I think it's a mistake by the Lakers. I think there is a little bit of Rob Pelinka having to cower before LeBron for a while. You've known people like this at work, right? They're lowly, then they become the boss, and it's like, oh, this guy's not as nice as I thought he was. And then Pelinka now having more power over LeBron is definitely throwing some elbows, is definitely settling some ego scores. Because in that report from Ramona and from Wendy, was the information that when Jeannie Buss, LeBron's close to, really close to, when Jeannie Buss decided to sell her stake in the Lakers. She's going to be reportedly a five-year governor. She'll basically control basketball ops for 5 years, but a new ownership group owns it, will take over, and in 5 years, Pelinka will be gone. Jeannie won't be in charge, and it'll be whatever. The people that own the Dodgers are going to own the Lakers. It's good for the Lakers. They told Luka. They gave Luka Doncic a heads up. They didn't tell LeBron James. If you're LeBron, and you've spent your entire life, adult life, telling GMs what to do, hoarding your power, throwing your weight around, literally recrafting the physics of how the NBA pays its players, the amount to which they do that, shifting and changing the ways in which players are able and willing to throw their weight around and force themselves somewhere else, player empowerment. I wasn't supposed to be in there, but I did. I once at a finals was doing pre- and post-game live with Jim Jackson, right? Jim Jackson played in the NBA for a while, buddy of mine, great guy, when I was over at Fox Sports, FS1. And Jim left his backpack. You basically have media availability at the finals, and then they kick you out because you're not allowed to go to practice. You're not allowed to be in there. And Jim, we were leaving. Jim forgot his backpack at the arena near the floor. And if it were me, and I said to Jim, let's not go, we're not allowed, basically his answer was, I'm Jim Jackson. So we walk into practice. We shouldn't have been there. I'm sorry, NBA PR. I shouldn't have been there. And LeBron James was conducting practice, and David Blatt was sitting in a corner not doing anything. And David tried to talk, and LeBron talked over him. And I tell this story to tell you this. LeBron's power, remember David Blatt, got guy fired, was so extreme that away from, credit LeBron, he didn't do it publicly as much. LeBron ran everything. LeBron ran practices. LeBron told David Griffin, his then GM, who to draft, who to trade for. LeBron has had all the power in law. LeBron got his podcast buddy hired and his son drafted and given a guaranteed deal. And so this notion, this idea, and it's in the story from ESPN, that LeBron James feels like he hasn't been treated properly, that he hasn't been respected, it's garbage. Of course it's garbage. Of course it comes off as obnoxious. Of course it comes off as tone deaf. Because guys like LeBron, think of it if you've ever had a boss who's such a egomaniac that he wouldn't understand what would happen if he got demoted. That's LeBron. He's been demoted. He doesn't know what to do. I mean, they gave his kid a contract, and I like Bronny, but that Bronny doesn't deserve. Of course they value LeBron. They hired the guy he wanted as the head coach. What did LeBron think it was going to do when the power structure changed? You think J.J. Redick was going to demand a trade too? Think he was going to strike until LeBron was in charge? What you're seeing out of L.A., the statement from Rich Paul that LeBron's going to evaluate things, the reporting that there are teams that are interested, especially the Warriors being in there, really is going to amp people up because they made a run at LeBron, we think, last January. All of this is designed by LeBron James to get back where he wants to be, to get back what he thinks is inevitable. LeBron in charge, add some pressure, make them come to their senses. And that's not going to happen. The Lakers have wisely sped up their post-LeBron world. It's over. We're in a post-LeBron Lakers reality. I don't think they planned it. Nobody foresaw that Luka Doncic would be gifted to the Lakers. But that's happened. And the fact that it's happened means LeBron's time running LA is over, and he hasn't come to grips with that. And I'm telling you, as somebody that's covered LeBron, as someone that's got along with LeBron, as someone who has been called a effing lie a few months ago by LeBron, my son Henry is still really mad at LeBron. It's okay, it happens. LeBron's not going to be okay with this. The drama is going to increase. The leaks are going to increase. You're going to see if he doesn't get his way, and he's not going to get his way. You're going to see anti-Pelinka stories come out. You're going to see stories about how LeBron has a problem with JJ, because LeBron doesn't know how to navigate not being the person in his own mind that he is, this magnificent gift to basketball humanity. The reason, and I covered this team, the reason LeBron James was such a unlikable heel in 2010-11, all the way back in the decision, is LeBron didn't know how to deal with not being liked. He didn't understand the consequences of his decisions. And he kind of figured it out, and that's when he got really good at managing his perception. But he never lost his power. He might have lost affection from you, from me, sycophants in mass, right? There were critics that he wasn't used to. He never lost his power internally in basketball. It's gone now. It doesn't matter what LeBron wants. If Bronny James were coming out this year, he would not have been drafted by the Lakers. Full stop, end of story. And so what you're seeing in the ESPN report about the Lakers turning to Luka and all the details about the why and Opus One and playing without LeBron, about LeBron not being informed about the ownership change, about the four teams that LeBron James supposedly has attracted interest from who have reached out. This is according to Dave McMenamin. Dave McMenamin is getting his information from, you ready for it, LeBron James's camp. All of this is LeBron grasping for power, for control from what he never had. And it's easy to laugh at him. I was talking to my neighbor the other day who's a Lakers fan who doesn't like LeBron very much because he's over him. And my son Henry, we were having a talk, my 13-year-old goes, actually, Henry's got to stop swearing, but he said a swear word, said he's the worst because, you know, LeBron went after his dad. And I defended LeBron to both my son and my neighbor. Because if you have that kind of power, if you have that kind of authority, if it's brought you multiple championships, if it's made you the best or second best player of all time, if it's brought titles to places like Cleveland that had never had one in living memory, or L.A. that had been after back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back losing, or at least playoff-free seasons, of course you're going to feel done the wrong way. And if you're the Lakers, you're doing the right thing. So I actually am not mad at LeBron James. I'm just telling you, I'm interpreting for you, that LeBron is going to get increasingly more bitter, angry, frustrated. And while I think right now it's a pose that he might leave, that I think it's him throwing a tantrum to get what he wants, I don't think he wants to leave L.A. I've seen his new house that they're building. It's amazing. I haven't seen the inside. Obviously, I've driven by like a weirdo when I'm going to a poker game, but whatever. I've seen there. Oh, there's LeBron's house. His kids have gone to school here. He loves L.A. I like L.A. I have no money. If I had LeBron money, though, L.A. might be the greatest place in the face of the earth, along with New York City. It's expensive here. Right now, I think it's just a pose. It may not be that come October, November, or February. Because LeBron, for the first time in his career, is not going to get what he wants by acting like a child. He's not. So this tantrum, it's the start of the problems, not the end of them. All right, 888-710-4476, 888-710-4ISN. I'll ask you this, because I'm going to ask this of Akeem Dermish. The Lakers have moved on. Worst case scenario, LeBron's an expiring contract, and they have a season this year. They win, I don't know, 43 to 49 games. They lose in the second round of the playoffs, and then they start to really build around a young Luka Doncic next year when LeBron's not on the books, and they have money to spend, and things are going to be great, blah, 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 blah. Okay. If you're the Warriors, if you're the Mavericks, if you're the Cavaliers, if you're any of these teams, would you want LeBron? And I'm not even, I'll give you an answer in 5 minutes because I don't know yet. I have to think about it. Would you want LeBron James on your team if you're not the Lakers? If you have an answer, 888-710-4ISN, I will give you mine, and then we'll get into the Bears doubling down on a GM who's done nothing but lose. I don't hate it, though. I'll tell you why. Next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
There is a fascinating do-or-die fork in the road. Is he Neon Deion or is he Levon Deion? That didn't work, but I'm going to keep... It's Friday. I'm going to go for some puns.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, good morning. Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. We've got a lot of things for you. I'm going to give you a little Disneyland story. We're going to get a very brief take, perspective, recommendation in a moment from the film producer, Nico, on Superman. He saw that. We'll get to some Wimbledon. We'll talk about Miles Turner. I do want to hit this really quickly, though. The Chicago Bears have looked at the, 15-36 record that they have accumulated under Ryan Poles. And they did what any organization would say. They go, let's give that guy a whole bunch of years. Extended the Bears GM until 2029. Now, that record's a bit of a misnomer, I suppose. The real reason, look, Poles has done a pretty nice job in the draft. He's a pretty good talent evaluator, and I think there's a couple reasons that he's gotten this extension. And look, I'm a Bears fan, so I'm going to come at it from a totally biased and absolutely emotionally stupid place. All right, that's just where I'm going to come from. And I say this a lot in the air, I hate the Chicago Bears so much, in part because I love them. All right, yeah, because they're horrible to root for. I don't mind a little bit of continuity. We talk all the time, I do, about ownership and the degree to which it is the most important thing in sports. It just is. Chiefs, Dodgers, Mets now, they haven't quite got... The Commanders maybe in a similar place to the Mets. It's significant. It is a life-changing reality for fans. It takes a while for owners, if they're the right owners, if they're good owners, to get to the right place. It did for the Dodgers when they took over from McCourt. Clark Hunt's family has owned that team forever, but Clark took over... I should know this because I worked at the Kansas City Star and knew Clark back then. in 2008 or 9. It's a long time ago, but it took him a couple years to he hired Scott Pioli, for crying out loud. It took him a while for him to figure it out. And the fact is the Bears are on that list. If you ranked owners in the four major sports from best to worst, they'd be very close to the end of the list. It's an awful ownership group. They've been incredibly consistent in being inconsistent. I don't mind the fact that there's a GM that's going to see things through. I also think that the Caleb Williams verdict is out, but the trade in which they acquired him with Carolina, the way in which they fleeced that organization, it's one of the greatest trades of all time if Caleb Williams becomes even a top, I'm trying not to be too optimistic, 10 quarterback. And what's interesting about the extension is the future of Caleb Williams, the future of Ryan Poles' project, the future of whether the Bears are good or not good, comes down to a guy that's never coached in the NFL, Ben Johnson. A lot of shine, a lot of sizzle, a lot of hype, a lot of excitement. There's no way to know if it's going to work. There's just no way to know. I hope it does. I obviously think that it can. You are not sure about coaches who have never been head coaches in any of the sports, especially the NFL. More than any other sport, you are your skill set changes. You have to have the X's and O's. You have to have the understanding of football. Of course you do. But it's also about the ability to manage a major operation. I didn't think Dan Campbell was going to be any good when I saw his introductory press conference, and kind of knew he was when he came from Carolina and he did his bite kneecaps off thing, and the guy was amazing. He's inspiring. He obviously hired very good coordinators, at least at the beginning there. Now the head coaches in Chicago and New York with the Jets. I don't know if Ben Johnson's going to work out, and that's going to, I think, be the deciding factor and force in whether or not this Poles extension makes sense. But for continuity's sake, to invest, to create stability, for there not to be a bunch of drama, to be one less thing that the head coach has to worry about. If you're Ben Johnson, you want the GM to be there as long as possible who hired you. It's a very good roster. They've built the right team, defensively, offensive line, certainly skills positions around their quarterback. I think Caleb's going to be good. We're going to find out. Don't hate the Ryan Poles extension. Good morning, Nico Scarlatos. How's it going?
Good.
You're filling in again for Ryan Hickey.
Yes, that's right. I'm here ready to go on a Monday morning.
I was going to judge you because I used to be produced by Stuart Kovacs, who we all know and love. He's the associate producer on The Rich Eisen Show after this, and Zach Gelb Show. And he's a Michigan fan and an Ohio State fan. He loves Duke and UNC. He's a fake fan. I was trying to think of a nice way to say it. He's a fake fan. You're wearing a Michigan shirt. I was about to get on you because you didn't go to Michigan, but you have a good reason today that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, so last night the New York Mets, their first round draft pick was a Michigan baseball player. So now here I am wearing a Michigan baseball jersey to show my support of the newest New York Mets.
Where did you get the Michigan jersey on such short notice?
So I actually already happen to have one. I just love to collect old, like, throwback jerseys. So I got a Michigan Barry Larkin jersey, and it's been sitting in my closet. I haven't worn it in so long. And I was like, you know what? Today's the perfect day to whip this bad boy out.
It is a cool old-school Michigan. It looks good. It reminds me of my years in Iowa, seeing that jersey and just hating my team. You went to Superman yesterday.
That is correct. I did see the new Superman movie last night. I told you, like I said, off the air.
What do you think?
I didn't plan on going to see it. My real intention was to go see the new F1 movie.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah, the times just didn't work out. So then me and my brother were like, you know what? Let's go see the Superman movie. We've heard a lot of hype. Now, I do have to preface that we are big Marvel fans.
Me too.
So going into this, seeing it on opening weekend, we felt kind of like traitorish because we were like, okay. Oh, we're going to
James
see the
Gunn,
rival
though,
movie.
Did Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, but... Isn't him going from Marvel to DC also like a traitorish move? So we like didn't really want to support him.
It's kind of like Theo going to the Yankees if the Yankees were bad for a while.
Right.
Yeah. It's a betrayal.
I will say though, the movie was good. I don't want to say it was amazing, but I thought it was very good. I don't want to give too much away.
Don't tell me.
The production was very well done.
Thinking about taking my son Henry. Do you think my 13-year-old would like it?
I do. I think it's. I mean, there was a good amount of young kids in the crowd. I'll say that last night seeing it. So, I think he would enjoy it.
It's really. I've got to choose between two damaged, once great brands: Superman and the Home Run Derby. Because the Home Run Derby's tonight, and like Superman, it used to be really good. And like Superman, it's been since the 80s. That it was really something I actually think is worth watching. Are you gonna? It's such a watered down. Are you gonna watch the Home Run Derby tonight? You don't have to lie to me. It's fine. You're not even producing tomorrow. You can.
I am going to watch it.
You are.
Only because, if I'm being honest, there's really nothing else on. So it's kind of just like a process of elimination thing. I am very disappointed in the fact that there are like no superstars in it this year. Like Cal Raleigh's cool, but like he's not a superstar yet, I would say.
I'm only going to watch it, I think, unless I go to Superman, so I can make fun of it on the radio tomorrow. Or maybe I'll be won over. I won't be because it's going to be terrible, but maybe I'll be won over. All right. So Superman, you're given kind of a... Like a B plus ish kind of lukewarm review.
Yeah, I think B plus is perfect. Yep.
How is it? When I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, this is a long time ago, and one of these other Superman movies came out. The one that was by the guy that didn't have a name, the MCG or something. He did Charlie's Angels. You were probably two. An actor from Des Moines, Iowa, became that Superman. It was a career changing Brandon Roth or something his name was, and I went and I met his family because they made me write a story about him, and his parents were like, you're so nice. And then, because newspapers are idiots, then they made me write a movie review. So I went to the movie early, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen. That director just puked onto the kid, and so I wrote a pretty scathing review. And if I remember right, his mom called me and just tore into me, like, oh, this nice old lady is not as nice as I remember her. So it gets hard to carry the weight of being Superman. Just because you look like Christopher Reeves doesn't make you Superman, but that's what everyone does now. How's the Superman guy, the actor?
Yeah, I think he does a good job of portraying Superman and Clark Kent and all that. Lois Lane, the woman that plays her, does a fantastic job as well. So
I'm a fan of hers.
Yeah, it's a very good dynamic there.
She's a great dynamic. She's a great actress. Big fan. She's very, yeah. Okay, so if you had to do a review of the new Superman guy, his mother would not call screaming at you.
Correct. I don't think, I'll say this, the best acting that I thought was done in the movie was Lex Luthor.
That guy's a great actor.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice job by him.
Okay. I'm going to go. I'm like, maybe I'll take my kid tomorrow. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. I want to hit you with a couple, the sort of yin and yang of Wimbledon. The men's final underscores that we're still in a golden age. Just two different guys are going to push it through. The women's final in Wimbledon was one of the most brutal things I've ever seen in my entire life, and we'll talk about that.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
You're not allowed to lie. Nico Skarlatos asked me this question yesterday, so I'll ask you. He said, buy or sell, Ryan Hickey misses you, Bill.
Buy.
You liar.
I did.
I also bought that you missed me.
Bye.
We both lied. We both broke the rule.
Two lies make a right, right? Can we turn that?
Yes.
That saying
yes.
Into
bye. Correct. I like it.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you on this Monday. Good morning. Happy Home Run Derby Day. Nobody cares. Maybe you do care. Sorry. We all care. Home Run Derby is going to be great. Way to go. Let's go Major League Baseball. Bit of a slow stretch in the sports world. Calm before the storm. Unless you care about Chelsea beating PSG in the World FIFA Cup stupid classic. I'm a soccer fan. I don't even care. Not a lot happening. Obviously no actual baseball games today. But we did have a Wimbledon final. Two of them. Over the weekend. And it was, to quote that famous novel, I don't know what it's called. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Nico, do you know what the best of times, worst of times came from? I think it was Charles Dickens, for sure.
I am not familiar. I know there's a song by Styx called The Best of Times, but I assume that's not what you're referring to.
You've never heard it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of the Mets, it was the age of the Yankees, whatever. It kind of goes, it's not Great Expectation. It's about France and London. Okay. Anyway, I'm obviously not very educated. It's fine. My point is, you had real beauty and real ugliness in these Wimbledon finals. And let's start with the positive before we get into the ugliness. The men's final is a reminder that despite the it really is the sun setting on this greatest era in tennis history. I know that Novak Djokovic is still out there. He's still competing. He made a semifinal. It's amazing. But Federer's retired. Nadal's retired. And there was this sense, and I understand why, that we were never going to see ever a level of tennis approaching those three guys ever again. Yesterday's men's final between Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz was the first Wimbledon final since 2003 that didn't feature one of the big three or Andy Murray, who's a very good player who was from England. That's crazy. And yet, Jannik Sinner beating Carlos Alcaraz in four sets and coming off a French Open where Alcaraz basically fended off several match points and won maybe the greatest tennis match of all time, has just reiterated the fact that there are no other players at the level of Sinner and Alcaraz. And we are probably at the dawn of an era where if they can stay healthy, if they can stay motivated, in Carlos's case, if he can stay away from Ibiza, apparently it's an island in Spain where everybody parties, and in Sinner's case, how about we stay off the juice? He was suspended earlier this year for performance-enhancing drugs in a deal that a lot of tennis players thought was total garbage in terms of the application of the rules, even if people buy his excuse that it was an accident and he didn't cheat. If these guys can stay on the path they're on now, there's a world where in 10 years they've each got 17, 18, 19, 20, 22 Grand Slams. And so that was a cool moment over the weekend watching this and thinking, all right, this sport has the ability to continue to produce for the men this amazing level of greatness. Oh, and by the way, the Americans that compete aren't at that level, but there are a couple of guys that have a chance to get there. Ben Shelton got utterly smoked in his match, but he's an exciting young left-handed guy. Taylor Fritz, I don't know why I think he has a punchable face. He's probably the nicest guy in the world. Probably totally wrong. I told you last week I hate the guy. I do, but I have no reason for that. I have nothing to go on. I don't know why. Are you ever walking down the street, right? Or you go to a movie, you go to Superman, or you go to and you see a stranger and you hate him and you don't know why? I hate Taylor Fritz. And I'm probably, and by the way, a couple of those people are not friends of mine. I've met, like Ryan Hickey. Point is, you can't judge a book by its cover. And so maybe Taylor Fritz is worth rooting for. He's certainly really, really talented. A different reality on the women's side on Saturday. And this one, it was one of the most painful things I've ever seen in sports that I don't have a connection to, right? Other than the kick game, Missouri against Nebraska. You won't know what that is, but it sucked. Or the Bartman game for the Cubs, which you do know what that is. Or whatever your version of that is, most of us have them. I guess unless we're from Boston, the Buckner thing's over because they've won every championship in every sport, it feels like, for the last 20 years. Most of us have some heartache. Outside of a personal connection, this is the hardest thing I think I've ever seen. I'm gonna butcher her name. I'm sorry. Amanda Anisimova? Anisimova? Anisimova. I crushed it. Pronunciation king. She's an American. She made the Wimbledon final. She played in. She got past Sabalenka in a three-set thriller. She is a huge hitter. She's an amazing player. And she was going against Iga Swiatek, who, look, Iga's an amazing player. She's won a bunch of Grand Slams. She's not a great player on grass, which is obviously what Wimbledon's played on. And this is the first time that Iga had played at a high level. The point was, Iga was the favorite, but there was certainly a world where Anisimova could have won. And she utterly and totally melted down with the entire world watching, with every tennis player on earth watching, 6-0, 6-0, to the point where she started crying in the second set on a changeover. And it's just a reminder, and I know we say this all the time, these athletes are in fact human beings, and the pressure does break people. And the thing that was horrible about watching this is the equivalent of, in baseball, and we've seen this, watching somebody unable to throw from second base to first base, Chuck Knoblauch, say, or a pitcher, remember Rick Ankiel, this old school, being a top pitcher in baseball, and then just, all of a sudden he can't throw to the catcher. That guy had to reinvent himself as a hitter. If it were in Game 7 of the World Series, this would be a golfer. Remember when Phil Mickelson, this is a while ago too, blew a U.S. Open by going double bogey on 18? This would be literally the equivalent of having maybe a 6 or 7 or 8 stroke lead and melting down over 4 holes because it was a slow motion car wreck. It was really hard to watch. And the problem becomes for this woman. It was, oh my, her mom flew in from America. It was so brutal. Hopefully she just puts it behind her. All right, you have bad days. You get the yips. You start, I mean, she couldn't hit a ball and she was double faulting. It is the kind of match that can alter a career. Those things happen. So it's something to keep an eye on. It was really hard to watch. She had an amazing post-game press conference. She burst into tears but thanked her family. And sports can be brutal. Sports can be hard to stomach. I mean, this is, Markel Fultz maybe is the most recent example in American sports. I guess this is American sports because she's an American. This guy was drafted number one overall and can't shoot. Like, got the yips in his shooting stroke. Things happen. All right, moving on to Miles Turner. Miles Turner, man, I gotta stop being so mean to the Milwaukee Bucks. Miles Turner's gonna say, maybe, you know what, I'm gonna be nice here. Miles Turner, amazing, everything's great, Bucks can win the whole thing. Dear, did I do it? Did I do it Milwaukee? Did I do it the right way? It is a big change for the Pacers. The Pacers were built on an amazing amount of depth. And with Tyrese Halliburton going out for the season with that injury in Game 7 of the Finals, it made sense they're going to have to recalibrate this upcoming season, that they weren't going to be able to compete at the level they wanted. That's an organization, ownership-wise, historically very, what's the word I'm looking for? Cheap. They're cheap. They don't like to spend money. And the Bucks made Miles Turner a really competitive offer. Some of the context here you have to understand is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers loathe each other. They remember when Giannis had to go into the tunnel, try to get a game ball, and there was almost a fight? These guys hate each other. And so it's kind of a betrayal. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where you make this leap and you make this jump and you go to the bad guys. And money always, right, is a motivating factor, but guys are going to make money. Miles Turner, at his introductory press conference for the Milwaukee Bucks, right, where they introduce you, had a really interesting, and I think it's believable, it's real explanation for the fact he wanted to win, right? I want to win, he said, is part of the reason he made this switch.
For me, you know, ultimately it was about just staying competitive. 2 years ago, got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Obviously, last year we got to the Finals. But, you know, being there, being part of it, winning basketball has just changed my entire perspective on this league. And I saw a chance to remain competitive here.
I respect the hell out of it. I went back and I watched this press conference, and I liked the guy, and I bought it, and he's going to make a lot of money, but I thought, and the East is down, so it's pretty open. It's hard to really peg who we think is going to be the team to beat. We'll talk to Hakeem Dermish, my buddy, is going to join us, CBS Sports HQ anchor, in a few minutes, about 20 minutes. He's a huge Cleveland guy. I'm sure he's going to make the case for the Cavs, and that's the team you'd point toward, but there's plenty of reasons to doubt Cleveland. Their history, Donovan Mitchell in the postseason, they're not dominant. They weren't in the playoffs. The only thing that gives me pause in buying this is Miles Turner's real reasoning is I don't believe personally the Milwaukee Bucks are good enough. And I have to believe that he sees it differently. That he looks at Giannis, okay, sure, yes, 100%, absolutely. But in Kyle Kuzma and the juniors, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced that Giannis, Miles Turner, Kevin Porter Jr., who's the other junior? Gary Trent Jr., Kyle Kuzma, that's your starting five. That's your championship-level basketball team. That team would lose in 3 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. For the first time in history, they would just get Doc Rivers be, I'm golfing. We forfeit. We're not going to play game 4. It's a golfing white. He doesn't even raise a white flag. He raises the pins are, the flags on the golf pin. Because he's out golfing. That's a Doc Rivers shot. It feels good. Feels good because it's true. But maybe I'm wrong. Giannis is an amazing player. Maybe Miles Turner brings a little bit of a spark. They had to replace Brook Lopez. The problem is I don't know that Turner is, he's better than Lopez at this stage of his career. I don't know that he is that much better. And again, I like Miles Turner. In fact, before I take shots at Miles Turner, let him tell you, and I believe this too, that he is still very motivated. He wants more in terms of winning.
I'm more focused than ever. You know, I'm just obviously more motivated than ever. You know, getting to the very last day of the season, I'll be able to see it through. So, you know, I'm very confident in my abilities and the confidence in this roster and this group, you know, to make some things happen. You know, I mean, I've heard somebody else say, talking about the Eastern Conference this year. I mean, it's going to be an interesting season, but I got full confidence.
But what Miles Turner is the what best player in the NBA? The 40th best player? The 50th best player? This isn't like adding Damian Lillard when he was, 15, top 15 player. And by the way, and you know this, we all know this, that didn't work. That didn't work. This is not adding Luka Doncic to the Lakers, who have more depth, by the way, and did last year, who was a top 3 or 4 player in the NBA. And guess what? That didn't work either. You're adding a guy that's fine. I don't want to undersell this. He's not Kyle Kuzma. He's a really, really good basketball player. I respect the hell out of him. I want him to be good. I want him to be great. This is not some game changer. I just looked it up. Entering last season, I had to rank where Miles Turner was on my list. I had him at 62. Do I think he's made a leap of 30 places? No, he's not a top 30 player. He's a good player. He's a fine player. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. In a lot of ways, I think it showcases, because I'm going to take him at his word that he wants to compete. I talked in this segment about Amanda Anisimova and just the brutality with which she lost and the way in which sometimes I gloss over that athletes are competitors and they're human beings and they struggle. There are all these motivations. They're complicated, just like the rest of us. I believe Miles Turner, in large part, went to Milwaukee because he wants to compete. I really do. I think that's more about the Pacers than the Bucks. It's not as if the Thunder were offering him a gig. It's not as if the Cavs were like, come on over and play for us. And so the Bucks were probably the best opportunity at the price that he feels like he's worth, the money he's worth, to try and compete. Do I think Milwaukee has a better chance than the Pacers next year? Yes, I do. Do I think Milwaukee's one of the teams that could make the NBA Finals? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams I put on the list. I don't think they will. But we fast forward to the future, and future Bill tells past Bill Ryder, Giannis carried this team and it worked out. Yeah, that tracks. I would ask whether Doc Rivers retired, but whatever, that totally tracks. So I buy Miles Turner's competitive juices as a part of this. I just don't think it's going to work. Give me, if it's not Cleveland, give me Detroit ahead of this team. Give me Orlando. Give me somebody that's a surprise. Maybe it's Atlanta. I'm not as high on Atlanta as other people, despite the Porzingis addition. Give me the Celtics being surprising or making some move. Give me Philly when LeBron forces his way there and they become the most dysfunctionally talented team of all time. Just kidding. He's not going to Philly. Philly's interesting. All right. You know what? I'm going to keep this conversation going with Akeem Dermish, my buddy, one of the most talented broadcasters, sports broadcasters in America, and a big Cleveland fan, joins me next here on Ride of the...
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right. Good morning. This is a treat. This is exciting for you and it's exciting for me because I used to work at CBS Sports until recently. Many talented people at CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. But with all respect to Chris Hassel, who's great, Joe Musso, who's great, lots of people who are great, Akeem Dermish is the most talented of the group. He just is. He's the best sports personality, anchor, broadcaster, journalist at CBS Sports HQ. That's just my two cents because I tend to be, as you heard, writer than you on most things. And I also think the guy's great. And he's a Cleveland dude, so we're going to get into some Cleveland topics. Mr. Dermish, good morning.
Good morning. You are too kind. You are too kind, my friend. You're one of the best in the business. I appreciate you.
Look at that voice. Look at that voice. Look at the loquaciousness beginning. All right. Let's just get right into this because, Akeem, I was on Cleveland radio last week, and I was asked by a couple of those guys about whether if I were Kobe Altman, who just got extended, by the way, the GM of the Cavs, whether I'd pursue LeBron James, whether that would be a good move just for argument's sake, if he was able to make it work, would you want LeBron? And those guys were divided. You are a Cleveland guy. You've known LeBron. You did broadcasting there. You're a journalist there. You're a national guy now. LeBron James or the Cleveland Cavaliers, good or bad this year?
Good. Bring him back. Let's make it happen. Whatever it takes to get a deal done, I would be in favor of it. Now, I will say that, people in Cleveland are split because some will say, well, we already have a circus in town. It's the Cleveland Browns. We don't want another circus. But the thing is like, what are you chasing as a fan? You want rings, you want championships. And so to me, it's like, if you can welcome LeBron back, because you can always come home, right? That's the saying. You can always come home. LeBron has a mansion in Akron. So it's not like he has to move like you and I, and we have to, call a truck and they back everything up. He gets on a plane, goes back home, plays for the Cavaliers, and brings a ring. Now, as long as it can continue with Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell, fine. If they have to give up any other piece, I'm okay with it. If they have to part with a draft pick, fine. And it's going to be obviously a package deal. It would be LeBron and his son. It's not like, hey, kid, I'm going to leave you in L.A. So Bronny's going to come along. So then you got to obviously take that into account in terms of a roster spot and what are you going to do with him. But if you have a chance to bring back LeBron in his last year or final year of his career, yeah, you figure out a way to bring him back. I mean, the East is wide open. So to me, it makes sense. And if you're Kobe Altman, make a phone call.
CBS Sports, Akeem Dermish here on the show. Yeah, I think it would clearly, Darius Garland would clearly have to go. there'd probably be picks involved. And you noted this, Akeem. It's the East is, I mean, it is just, it's bad, right? It's going to be bad. The Celtics are in a down year without Haliburton and now Miles Turner, who's a Milwaukee Buck, as you know. The Pacers are not going to be a competitor. I don't buy into Atlanta as much as everybody else, but maybe Miami didn't make any moves. They're not going to be particularly impressive. Maybe Detroit or Orlando makes a push. I like Desmond Bane with the Magic. That's a nice move. And the Pistons had a really good year last year. But it feels like it's Cleveland's to lose. Let's just say there's
I still think the Knicks are right there. I don't think the Knicks fell off. They didn't lose any pieces, but
yeah,
that's fair. I think Mike Brown. I'm a Mike Brown guy. He was in Cleveland.
Are you?
It didn't work. It didn't work out. But I think he's a good coach. He's a good coach. He's a player coach. He hasn't gotten the results, you know, that teams want. But he was part of a championship winning team in Golden State. So, I mean, he's got the pedigree. I mean, I still think the Knicks are going to be competitive next year. I think that's the team really that's going to stand in the way of the Cavaliers, because I think at this point right now, it's the Cavs and Knicks really that have the clear path to the Eastern Conference title.
All right, give me your confidence level. You're right. The Knicks are really good on paper. I'm not a big Cat guy. Give me your confidence level. If there's no moves, if there's no LeBron James, Cavs is constructed, what is your confidence level that Cleveland, in this very wide window, right, this is their moment, make an NBA Finals?
So it's always the caveat, right? If they can stay healthy. If they could have stayed healthy this year, I think they would have gotten to the finals. Donovan Mitchell was banged up. Evan Mobley was banged up. DeAndre Hunter was banged up. And I get it. This happens in the playoffs. But if they're healthy, they're getting to the finals. They're that good. They're just a step down below the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're not that far off in terms of their talent. They're young. They're fast. They're a culture that plays like a team, which is much like what Indiana does. You know, obviously, the Cavs have a superstar in Donovan Mitchell, but they're a team. I mean, and then you have Atkinson running that show. I mean, they're a really, really good, solid club that can get to a finals. And I don't think it's out of the question to think that even without LeBron in a down year in the East, they could get there.
How many years, Akeem Dermish, is because for all the people that love LeBron and hate LeBron, and I had this, my neighbor doesn't like him. He's a Lakers fan. I was trying to tell the guy that LeBron's still amazing. 25-7-7, pretty durable. I mean, and I remember Tim Duncan being a shell of a human being at the end of his career, but they would rest him minutes, and he would play well in the playoffs, and the Spurs got another title against the Heat, in part because Pop knew how to sort of manage that body. LeBron still looks and plays like he's a 32-year-old, and so if you got to a place where you could rest him a little bit, I think he's capable of being good for a long time. For you, let's say he goes to Cleveland, because he's not going to be in L.A. after this season. That window is closing. How many years of LeBron James are left at the level of being whatever he is now, top 10, top 15 player, whatever that is?
Probably two.
Yeah.
Probably 2 years. I mean, he averaged more than 30 minutes per game last season. I mean, he's just, and we always talk about how father time is undefeated. He spends $1 million on his body in the off season, so he takes care of himself really well. I don't think that for him, it's an issue of age. It's whether his body feels good enough. I think, you know, we've heard the leak of a tape of him saying that his wife wants him to retire in the next 2 years. And I think at the end of the day, that's probably what'll happen. I think max 2 years is what he'll play. He wants clearly another ring, but I think for the first time in his career, he's realizing it's not about him. This is now the path that he's crossing into the end of his career, where he goes, well, a team's not building around me anymore. They're building around Luka. So if he's going to take, you know, exception to that, he's going to be upset about that. Then he needs to figure a way to get back to Cleveland, because at the end of the day, that's the smartest move for him, where it doesn't look bad in terms of his legacy, because he's very aware of how he looks and how he's perceived. And if he goes back to Cleveland, that's not anything like, well, I was chasing this, or he's chasing a championship, but it wasn't like he's trying to go, you know, to the highest bidder. He's already making 52.6 on his option, so he'll get paid even if he goes somewhere else. The thing is, to me, is he's got to realize that it's not about him this year. And so if he's okay with that, and them not necessarily building around him because they're building for the future in Luka, and now they have a new ownership group, they're not looking at 2025 and 26 as this is the year we have to win a title. They're looking beyond that. And LeBron has to be either A, okay with that, or say, hey, make a trade, make a deal. I want to move on. I want to win a title. I need to do this now.
All right, Akeem, you can defend LeBron if you want a little bit here, because at the start of the show, I got into how, and you just hit on this, I like LeBron, even though LeBron sort of loves and hates me depending on the moment. I don't think we're gonna, I'm not sure I'm on his Christmas card list right now, which is fine. I like him. He's complicated.
I think he's taken aim at a lot of people. I think he's
He really has.
He's probably a little salty. Like, I will always respect LeBron. He brought Cleveland a title. He was always, you know, he was always, I never had any run-ins with him, but I didn't have the same relationship that you did with him. And so for me, he does sometimes, he plays favorites. That's how it works. He knows the business. He knows the guys that he goes towards. Cause I remember in Cleveland, the guys that he would give extra time to and all of that. But yeah, I mean, he's probably a little salty. He's probably a little on edge because he knows that his career is coming to an end and it's been an amazing career. And I mean, he's one of the best players in NBA history. If you, whether you argue he's better than Michael or Michael's better than him, he's literally the top two player in NBA history.
I agree with everything you said. And I actually have some sympathy for him because he has controlled every aspect of every organization he's been in. Maybe not Miami, part of the reason he left, but he had a lot of influence there, and that's gone. But defend for me. Here's the thing. Okay, I'm not ever going to get into somebody's wallet. But how do you opt into your 52-point-whatever $6 million player option and in the same breath release a statement that says, I'm going to evaluate things? Why not? And again, it's not my money, but LeBron's got enough money, dude. I've taken less money to be happy in jobs. A lot less money. LeBron's got money. Why not just opt out, or not opt in, I should say, and go wherever you want, and maybe he'll do this next year, and just take the mid-level? Why not go to Cleveland, Ohio, and play for less money so they don't have to trade Darius Garland? I don't understand his reasoning.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. People take less money. Tom Brady took less money to go to Tampa Bay. What did he do? He won a title. So to me, it's like, if you're going to chase a title, then you personally have to do whatever it takes to do that. So if that means you have to take $30 million less because you're already a billionaire, what does that matter to you? Is it because you want the status? You want to say, oh, I got paid $52.6 million in my last year with the Lakers? No. If what's more important to you, that money or the title? What's more important to your legacy, that money or a title? To me, it's like, absolutely, do whatever it takes. Hey, you go to the front office, you say, hey, I'm willing to take less money if we can get another guy. If that means we can bring in another piece to help us win a title, that to me is common sense. And the whole idea of we're monitoring what the Lakers are doing, it's as if he wasn't already monitoring what the Lakers are doing. He was already doing that. Don't try to sell us on the idea that you're monitoring. It's like you're like a hall monitor and tell us that you're checking on the Lakers. You've been doing that your whole entire career there.
It's a tantrum.
He did that in Cleveland. He did that in Miami. What he does is he becomes the GM. And he unfortunately, he pushes people sometimes in directions they don't want to go, and sometimes the decisions don't work out.
Yeah, I think Rob Pelinka's enjoying Pelinka's newfound freedom. I mean, that gift of Luka wasn't just Luka, that's the biggest gift. It was the gift to Rob Pelinka to be able to speed up the post-LeBron era, which makes sense, right? For Luka's obviously much younger. Hakeem Dermish here on the show. All right, Hakeem, last one for you before I let you go. You obviously cover all sports, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the air. I mean, I'm mean to people on the radio show, too. I'm honest. I just call like it is. Hakeem Dermish, massively talented CBS Sports HQ anchor. You have to. If you don't watch CBS Sports HQ, I'm not going to push that as hard as I used to, but it's worth watching for Hakeem. I promise the guy's amazing. Hakeem, you're great. You are a baseball guy. Can you do me a favor? Because I've gotten a little. I love baseball, but I have a love-hate relationship with the sport. Can you sell me on the Home Run Derby this year? Are you able to try to give me a pitch on why I should watch this instead of going to Superman with my kid?
Ooh, Superman was shot in Cleveland, so that's tough.
Who was shot in Cleveland? I didn't know that.
Yeah, bro, that's the birth of Superman. It was in Cleveland. Dude, all great things come from Cleveland and Ohio. Like, just I'm not saying everything because there's a lot
including
of great
my
things
wife.
In the world. Like,
no, I'm with around, you. My wife does, too.
Cleveland, Ohio is where a lot of great things have happened, and Ohio itself. But look, I love the rest of the country, don't get me wrong, I love it, but I'm just telling you, a lot of great things come from Ohio.
All right.
The All-Star game, here's the pitch.
Okay.
Cal Raleigh, his nickname is the Big Dumper. It's a fantastic nickname from Seattle. He's their Mariners catcher. He's the favorite to win it. How do you not want to watch that? His dad's going to throw to him. He's a former college coach. His brother's going to catch. And then you have two Dominican Republic players that are from the DR, and the last three players to win the Derby are of Dominican heritage. Juan Soto, Vladdy Jr., and Teoscar Hernandez. So I'm watching to see if one of the two guys from the DR wins it this year. Maybe a little sprinkle, if you know what I'm saying.
I do.
But that's why I'm watching, because, number one, I love baseball, and I love to see these guys swing for the fences. My only concern, I'm always hesitant, is it going to mess up the guy's swing? If it does, oh, well, that's their job. They're professionals. but I'm watching, obviously, because it's my job. And number one, I love the Home Run Derby. Fun fact, I caught a Home Run Derby ball in Detroit one time. So I always have a love relationship with the Derby because of the experience I had.
You're right about it. Was it Cody Bellinger whose swing got shredded several years ago? I think it was.
Bobby Abreu's did. Julio Rodriguez hasn't been the same since he was in the Derby also with the Mariners. Sometimes guys' swing gets messed up because they're swinging so many times. And that's the concern. But, you know, I guess it's what outweighs it. It's like, again, it's like the dunk contest in the NBA. What's great about baseball is they usually get their superstars. In the NBA, they don't get their superstars anymore to get the dunk contest. They're like mid-level stars. I mean, we're having Mac McClung out here winning. You know, no disrespect to him, but
no, you
he's winning dunk
him.
Contests. No, you well, should. I'm just saying. So my point is there's going to be a star that wins the Derby tonight.
The Big Dumper is enough. You had me at the Big Dumper.
Fantastic, right? It's one of the greatest nicknames of all time.
What's the best nickname you've ever been given? I'll give you mine. Who was it? I think it was Jim Jackson pushed it, but I think someone, Archie Hawkins, Sweet Willie. That's what they all called me when I worked at Fox. They put it on the
I mean, mine's easy. It's the Dream, Hakeem the Dream.
Oh, the Dream. Both of those are good, and they not even added together are they the Big Dumper. The Big Dumper is very good. It was so nice to have you on the show. Why didn't I do this before? We're going to do it a lot going forward, Hakeem Dermas. This was great, pal. Thank you.
Hey, I love it.
You're a friend. You're a talent. And it's early for you because I know the hours you work. Thanks for doing this, pal.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, buddy. Hakeem Dermas is the absolute best. I'm serious. He's gone now. He can't hear me. He is the best anchor that I've worked with. The guy is massively talented. Love the guy on Twitter at Hakeem Dermas. And I like the all good things come out of Ohio. It's true. It's real. Or I'll say this, a lot of great things, including my bride, my wife. Let's go. By the way, one of you got mad at me. He gets mad at me all the time. Social media. Pete P. Pete, you're an angry guy, but I love that about you. Sports writer. A tale of two cities. I know you know this, and I'm in no mood to listen to you pretend that you are not highly intelligent and well-read. Look, bro, I am I'm intelligent. Highly intelligent is debatable. And I'm certainly well-read. I just forgot. I've read the book, Tale of Two Cities. It's a great book. Amazing book. I don't remember what happened, but a guy basically gives up his life. Spoiler alert. Guy gives up his life to save the woman he loves who doesn't love him back in the French Revolution at the end. It's amazing. Pete, you got to calm down, bro. It's all good. I got a lot in my brain. I'm trying to figure out why the hell Nico Scarlatos has a Michigan jersey on. All right? There's a lot happening here, including buy or sell. Some news on Cooper Flagg, a little shutdown. Is it problematic? We'll get into it next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I'm no Adonis, okay? Nobody's ever confused me for Brad Pitt. And I look like Ryan Gosling compared to this dude.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Nico, have you ever lost your wallet before and been unable to find it?
I've lost things in the wallet, like a credit card or ID, stuff like that, but I've never actually lost the wallet itself.
My wallet's gone. Lost it Saturday. I have no idea where it is. It's been missing for 3 days. Pretty sure. I'm trying to figure out if I threw it away or something. I don't. It is. I have had many decades of not losing your wallet. It's a man's mission. Hold on to that wallet. All my crap's in that wallet.
Now, I am not someone that has one of these or wants one of these, but I've seen a lot of people go with the ID and credit debit cards in the back of your phone. There's like a phone case that like slides open. Would you ever do one of those?
My buddy just pitched that to me, and it has a tracker on it. So his
tracker.
It's like a mini case that holds three or four things, and then it snaps. It's a magnet. It snaps onto your back of your phone, and it snaps off. But it also has a tracker on it.
Interesting. I've never been one to do it. I like, you know, phone in one pocket, wallet in the other. My legs feel balanced with the stuff that's in my pockets. I don't know.
My legs felt balanced until I lost it. What I should have done is put an Apple tracker in there. No one's used the car. No one's used it. There's no cash in there, right? It's amazing what a pain it is to get all the things back that you need, though.
Yeah, you don't realize it until it happens to you.
Not awesome. You know what is awesome? Buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, let's talk a little G League, or excuse me, Summer League basketball. G League, Summer League, basically the same thing. Cooper Flagg, the number one overall pick in this year's draft, has been told by the Mavericks that he will be shut down for the rest of the summer following his 31-point performance on Saturday. Buyers said that the Mavericks are making the right move here.
Buy. This is standard operating procedure. Every year that I had to go cover these things, I would show up. Was Wembanyama, what, 2 years ago? 2 years ago? I would show up, and the guy would play, and he would shoot badly, and maybe he played a little bit of a second game, maybe, and they'd shut him down. Everyone would freak out. It was totally normal. Really, there's no reason for this level of asset, of talent, of draft pick to play at all in Summer League, clearly. But I think there's just an expectation that Summer League's become such a big deal that they do it because people watch it on TV and show up, and you get a little bit of a buzz out of it. But Summer League is for guys that aren't going to make or aren't guaranteed to make the team. You're drafted 17th? Sure. You're drafted 9th, but you're a huge project? Okay. You're Bronny James, right? Yes. Cooper Flagg is going to play. He's going to play just fine. He doesn't need Summer League.
Talked a little Wimbledon last hour. Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner went head-to-head in the men's final yesterday. It was Jannik Sinner getting his first Wimbledon title. Those two have combined to win the last 7 major tournaments. Buy or sell that the Sinner-Alcaraz rivalry is going to end up being better than Roger Federer-Rafael Nadal.
That's a crazy stat. Is that right? I should know that. I didn't even know it was that many. So Alcaraz has 5 already. He's got 5 already. And Sinner's got, what, 4? I mean, I should sell this. I should scoff at the very... buy. I think, yeah.
Buy.
I think it can be. In part because Djokovic was in the mix, and Andy Murray to a lesser degree. So it was able to undercut some of their ability to stack majors. Carlos Alcaraz could have 15 of these things in 5 years.
Which is just insane to think about.
It's insane. They need some other people to step up and start winning some of these things. He's 22. Before he's 30, he could have 19 majors.
I like to think I'm still pretty young, but even that's like, oh my God, he's only 22? Jeez.
22. He's a kid, man.
Crazy.
It's crazy. Good for him.
Last night was the first 3 rounds of the MLB draft, and 17-year-old, talk about young people, 17-year-old shortstop Eli Willits drafted out of high school, going number 1 overall to the Washington Nationals. Buy or sell that the MLB draft, though, would have way more interest if they didn't do it in the middle of the season.
I'll buy.
Buy. Yeah.
I will say this. This was kind of interesting because this dude is the youngest player drafted since Ken Griffey Jr., and he was not expected to be drafted here. It was a bit of a shocker, and the Nationals just fired their GM and their manager. So this is a new person making decisions. That firing happened a couple weeks ago. And this dude's, by the way, a lot of shortstops in this draft. Very shortstop-heavy draft. And this guy doesn't have a lot of power. They think he'll project maybe as a 20-home run, 20 stolen base guy. Amazing fielder, but it's just, this is a reach. It feels like a bit of a reach. You're a Mets fan. You're wearing a Michigan jersey because apparently it was a Wolverine who got drafted. Buy or sell, you know enough about who the Mets drafted to be excited about him.
Sell.
That's the thing. Is these guys, this isn't Cooper Flagg. He's not going to play 1-for-10 game and then be shut down. The path to the majors is really brutal. And now, because of the way things are slotted, the dude that got drafted number 1 overall is going to make more than $11 million guaranteed. And so, not that that takes away from your hunger. But there was a time where if you got drafted number 1 and you didn't make it, you couldn't hit a curveball in Double A. Your inability to develop an off-speed pitch as a guy that threw 98 or 100. This happened to a guy that the Royals drafted number 1 overall years ago. And you stagnated, you know, at AAA. That can still happen, but now you have generational wealth. I find MLB's draft to be fascinating, but it's not as riveting, especially in the middle of the season, because it takes 2, 3, 4, 5 years sometimes to figure out if guys are going to work out or not.
Buy or sell, you think that players shouldn't be allowed to get drafted at high school?
I mean, it's the old scene from Moneyball, right, where Billy Bean is talked into it and doesn't go to whatever. It's not Harvard, Stanford, some fancy schmancy school. I'll sell. I think they should be able to.
Sell.
The problem becomes if you're drafted in the fifth round or the sixth round, whatever, the fourth round, and you make that decision and it doesn't work out. There was a guy, and I can't remember his name, there was a guy that was recruited back when Nebraska was good at football. When Nebraska recruited a kid to be their quarterback, and the Royals drafted him in the first round, and he decided to go be a Royal, and he, I don't think he ever made it past double A. He was good enough, they thought, to be an NFL quarterback, but he wanted to play baseball. I get it, baseball's amazing. You can wash out. There's a guy that works at my kid's school, really nice guy. He's a security guard. He played Major League Baseball. He hit a cup of coffee in the majors. And there's nothing wrong with being a security guard at a school. He's obviously not living in three mansions the way that a Major League Baseball player who gets a massive contract is. So I don't mind high school kids being drafted, but there's so much more risk in baseball to make it than the other sports.
Gerrit Cole's an example of it. I know he's now on the Yankees, so it ended up working out. But in 2008, he got drafted in the first round by the Yankees, decided to forego that, went to college at UCLA, ended up being the number one pick a couple years later for the Pirates. And I guess it's fair to say that his career worked out well, so maybe going back to college instead of getting drafted at high school could work out for some guys.
That's the thing is, like, it takes so... Bubba Starling's a guy I was thinking of. It takes so... Look, when I was 17 years old, if you told me that a team drafted me to play baseball... When I was 19 years old or 18 years old, I applied for an internship at a newspaper. I was at the University of Missouri, and a newspaper called me and offered me a job. Not an internship, a job, in some small newspaper in the middle of Florida. And they offered me $22,000 a year. I was poor. My dad had just lost his job. I had student debt, whatever. Worked a bunch of jobs. And I called my, I'm going to leave college. And they had to be like, Bill, $22,000 a year is not the money you think it. Don't. And I stay like, okay. But my point is, somebody offers me, I don't know, $300,000 to go play baseball, I'm rushing to do that, and it could be a mistake. Good for Gerrit Cole. I did not know that. That's betting on yourself.
You're a big soccer guy. Let's talk some soccer.
All right.
Chelsea defeating PSG 3-0 in the Club World Cup final at MetLife Stadium yesterday. Buy or sell that there are just way too many tournaments to keep track of in soccer.
Yeah, buy. And this is, by the way,
buy.
This is not political. I would say the same thing as Joe Biden. What is the president doing on the... Did you see this? He was celebrating with the team.
I did not see this.
And one of the players told him to leave, basically. Are you going to leave? And he's like, nope. And so Donald Trump was just standing there, you know, because when these guys win, they all jump up and down, they do the trophy. Yeah, there's too many. I love soccer. The FIFA Club World Cup of Greed or whatever it's called was awful. Awful product.
Buy or sell, you think that Donald Trump was a diehard Chelsea fan, or you think he's a front runner?
Yeah, I don't think he knows it. I mean, like most Americans, I don't think he knew even know who Chelsea, right? I'm gonna buy he's a front runner. Yeah.
Buy.
Yeah, that was yeah.
Joe Burrow and Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo were on Quarterback, the Netflix documentary, and after one of the games, Spagnuolo told Burrow that he thinks he's the second best quarterback in the league. Take a listen to this.
Hey, other than our guy, you're the best in the business. I'm not saying that because you're saying you're the. I appreciate you. Good luck. Best.
When saying the other guy, he's referring to, of course, Patrick Mahomes. Buy or sell, you think that Joe Burrow is the second best quarterback in the National Football League?
Buy. I actually do.
Buy.
Yeah. I mean, look, you have to be able to stay healthy. You don't. I do.
I thought for sure you were going to say no. I don't even think he's top three.
Who? You're not putting Lamar Jackson ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's a
Lamar
two-time
Jackson
MVP.
Can't win. He made the AFC Championship game. But, dude, I'll take Burrow has beaten the Chiefs. He's made a Super Bowl. He's beaten the Chiefs at Arrowhead. I think Burrow's, look, it's Mahomes, and then it's a really tough call because you can go Josh Allen. You can go Lamar Jackson. You can go Joe Burrow. Those are all reasonable. And maybe C.J. Stroud's going to make that kind of a leap. There's another, who am I forgetting? There's somebody else I'm totally forgetting. There's a couple guys. Wow. Are you going Josh Allen too, I hope?
Yeah, I think Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are both ahead of Burrow. For now, that could obviously change.
Oh, my
They're
God.
Young.
No, hell no, Lamar. If you were building a team right now, you take Lamar Jackson over Joe Burrow?
I would.
Hell no. Put Joe Burrow on that Ravens team, and they're winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but he's got a whole bunch of talent. I know he's been injured a couple of times, but he's got a whole bunch of talent in Cincinnati and hasn't
not
been
on
able to
defense,
do it
yet. Not on an offensive line.
Yeah, that's fair. Ndamukong Suh has announced his retirement from the National Football League. The defensive tackle was a 3-time first-team All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowler, and a Super Bowl 55 champion with the Buccaneers. Buy or sell, do you think Sue's a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, buy.
Buy!
I mean, it's amazing Ndamukong didn't get sued for stomping on people.
But
on... Yeah, don't you? I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
I saw a couple people on social media saying no. That's why I wanted to ask. I thought for sure he would be, but...
I did, too. Not a likable guy. Not a likable guy, necessarily, but I mean, the guy has done everything you have to accomplish in the sport.
Najee Harris was in the news. He pulled a Jason Pierre-Paul with this one, getting injured, a superficial eye injury, after setting off some fireworks on July 4th. Buy or sell, you think there's got to be a rule in place that bans NFL players from using fireworks?
Yeah, like some guys have in their contract they can't go skiing and stuff. Mm-hmm. Buy.
Buy.
I don't want to make light of it. Every year, people lose their eye or die from fireworks. Just don't be stupid with fireworks.
I can't believe that after seeing it happen to players before, what would make you not think, like, hey, maybe I should stay away from this, you know? Like, why do they not?
Well, nobody ever thinks it's going to be them.
Yeah.
Here's true. The thing. You're Najee Harris. Just have your buddy do it. Like, bro, you're doing the fireworks today.
You think?
Did I buy or sell, you think it's weak of me as an American that every time someone's doing fireworks around me or my kids, I get the hell out of there?
Sell.
Yeah, I get the hell out of there.
I don't blame you. I would do the same thing.
The nice people next to my house / idiots next to my house over July 4th, they had a party and some dumb idiots started setting off fireworks down the street, and one of them came over my house and blew up outside my bathroom window. Like, hey, guys, go somewhere else.
I come from a big dog family, too, and my dogs always get scared.
Yeah.
So my family especially tries to stay with that. I mean, we enjoy watching it from afar, but...
Let the pros do it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Professional firework setters? Absolutely.
Over to the Home Run Derby, which I know you're so excited for this evening. Cal Raleigh and his 38 home runs highlight the participants in this year's event in Atlanta. Buy or sell that you're going to watch the Home Run Derby tonight.
Man, we've been talking about this. I mean, Akeem Dermish made a really good point about the Big Dumper. Cal the Big Dumper, what a great nickname.
So awesome.
I'm not sure. I'm gonna tentatively buy. I have nothing else planned.
Buy.
Probably gonna go to Superman tomorrow.
If I was to reword it, if you had the option to do something else over watching the Home Run Derby, buy or sell, you'd do that other alternative.
Yeah. If any of my friends are looking for me to want to hang out, this is the night to invite me. I don't want to watch it.
Last one for you. Terry Francona, the current Reds manager, formerly with the Red Sox and Indians/Guardians, picked up his 2,000th win on Sunday. He is the 13th manager all time to get to 2,000 wins. Buy or sell, do you think Terry's a top 10 manager of all time?
Man. It's really hard to assess because of how long baseball is.
I looked at the list of the top, like the 13 managers with 2,000. At least 4 or 5 were names that I had never even heard of. So that's what made me think. I was like, all right, even though he's 13th in wins, I would put him in the top 10.
He won the World Series with the Red Sox when they came down from 3-0 against the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy.
Buy.
I'm going to do this without the requisite research that one would need to really make the argument, but my gut instinct is if I did that he would come out on that list. What a career. What a crazy career. We went late. All right. I blame Nico. Just kidding. It's my fault. Let's talk a little LeBron James.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. So I'm really interested in baseball players' journeys. That Gerrit Cole thing We just talked about the fact that Gerrit Cole, drafted by the Yankees out of high school, made the decision to go to college, bet on himself, gave himself more time to mature. This is from Nikos Karlatos. I did not know this. And then was again drafted by the Yankees coming out of college, and obviously that worked out really, really well. So there's a. I was just talking to Nico about the ways in which players' careers are really hard to follow, and there's no guarantee in terms of whether it's going to work out. And I brought up this random guy, Bubba Starling, but he wasn't random at the time. He was going to play quarterback at Nebraska. He was a three-star athlete. He was given a $7.5 million signing bonus by the Royals to talk him into playing Major League, or at least playing professional baseball. It was the highest amount of money ever paid to a draft pick at the time. This guy eventually did make it to the majors. He played in 35 games in the major leagues. He hit 169 with a home run and five runs driven in. And in 2011, about 10 years into his professional career, he retired. And this guy was a can't miss. He was one of the top quarterback prospects in college, in high school football, would have been a collegiate quarterback, would have started as a freshman at Nebraska. I know that doesn't seem like a big deal from small town Kansas outside Kansas City. Nebraska, obviously, just north of there. Point is, it's a hard road. You never know if you're going to make it or not make it. Do you, Nico, like that they now basically slot major money to top draft picks in baseball? Because you do this in football, you do this in the NBA. There's no guarantee they're going to make it, but there's a much higher percentage of top picks who succeed. Man, if you're paying, I think it's $11.6 million to the dude that just got drafted as a 17-year-old shortstop by the Nationals, number one overall. And I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for all these guys. But that's I think it's a much bigger risk in baseball now.
Yeah, I am not a fan of this at all. And I know it's going to sound silly coming from a Mets fan whose owner is Steve Cohen and has billions of dollars. But I've seen the Mets drift so many guys in the first round that either never made it to the major league level or were horrible when they did. So I think it's crazy to give all of this money to, especially in the Nationals case, a 17-year-old kid that you know nothing about.
Doesn't have a lot of power. I will say this in defense of the system and maybe a positive note for the Mets. It's been a long time since I covered baseball day to day, but I've done it. Did it back in the day and spent time covering spring training. There is a very widely held belief in baseball circles, and I think it's real, that there's a correlation between your farm system and the success of some of these guys that get drafted. Just like you can't separate a quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, from the fact that he was had to be coached by Urban Meyer. And so the way that you build a successful farm system, because it's not as simple as hire the right coach, hire the right coordinator, fix it. And even then, the NFL teams can't do it. They just, right? We've seen this. You have to really have a culture, and you have to have a lot of pieces because minor league baseball is complicated. It's a labyrinth. It's spread out through different cities, smaller cities. The Mets have the money to potentially create a system that allows them to better incubate, grow, nurture talent. One of the things about the Dodgers, and look, the Dodgers are obnoxious. I get it. And the money they spend and the power that they wield, but they are impressive at every level of baseball. And there is, I mean, they just basically said to Corey Seager, helped the Rangers win a World Series as one of the sweetest swings in baseball, we don't want you. And because they have so much money and so much talent, that was a homegrown talent they brought up. Bellinger, another guy that won an MVP and left, homegrown talent. So if the Mets or any team can create the right farm system, I think it helps some of these guys to figure it out. The other thing about the draft that's interesting in baseball, it's not a worldwide draft the way that it is in the other major sports. It is a draft for guys that are American, for American baseball players. And so you also have to have a corresponding ability, system of scouting for Latin America, for South America, for Asia. And so it's one piece of the puzzle. It's a lot of money to be spending on a 17-year-old who's one piece of the puzzle. It's not a worldwide draft. If it were, Shohei Ohtani would have been drafted number one overall immediately, right? So it's never going to happen. I would be fascinated. Maybe we'll get a baseball guest on and we'll ask, get an expert. I would be fascinated to know if you change the draft to it being international. And let's say, because if you draft somebody and they don't sign for you, they go to college, and this has happened too. They just go play in independent baseball because they don't want to be a part of your team. That doesn't usually work out. You lose your you don't retain the guy. So let's say that you opened up MLB's draft to the entire world, international, everybody can be drafted, and you retain rights for 2 years. What percentage of players from Japan do you think would be drafted in the first round? I think it'd be 3 or 4 out of here.
A good amount, yeah.
Maybe more. If you could lock in Shohei Ohtani and just hope in the next 2 years he decides he's willing to play for your team and wants to play Major League Baseball. In some ways, it would be, again, better for the sport because some of the best talent on earth comes from abroad, and that's about money. That's about what you can spend. I don't mind the Dodgers having an advantage on their international scouting. They scout Latin America, Mexico, Cuba, as best you can, South America, really well because it's money. They have the money to hire the right scouts and to put them down there. But at least you're sort of unearthing talent and there's a skill to it. It doesn't take a genius to realize that Shohei Ohtani's probably pretty good and you want to. And they didn't get Ohtani, to be fair. They didn't get Ohtani the first time around the Angels did. All right, so who did the Cubs draft? I didn't even look. Do you know? Is that guy Austin too?
I do not. I'd have to go look.
You could make up a name. You could be like, his name is Billy McRyderson, and he's a second baseman center fielder, and he's really good. And it wouldn't matter until he gets to Des Moines, Iowa, AAA, and see if he can hit a curveball. there's no way to know. There was a guy that I wrote about, again, for the Royals when I worked at the Kansas City Star. I can't remember his name. He was the number one pick in the draft for the Royals. I don't know if he might have been number 2 or 3 overall. He threw 101 fastball in high school, but he'd never been good. He was a shortstop and a center fielder, and one day, his senior year, his high school manager made him pitch, and he threw 101, and the Royals just drafted him, and he didn't know how to pitch. And I went to hang out with him in Texas, and he was trying to make a – he had dropped out. He basically 2 or 3 years had quit. He was trying to make a comeback by playing softball. Point is, there's a lot of swings and misses when it comes to MLB's draft. Home run derbies tonight, it's going to be amazing. That's me trying to just sell myself on it. Do you think the average sports fan will watch this thing tonight? Is it going to do – will the ratings be good?
I think it's going to be lower than it has been in the past years, and that's just because of the lack of stars that we have in it this year.
But the big dumper – what a nickname. That's the other thing. Major League Baseball, and I harp on this all the time, there's no parity in the game. All the talent collects in a few teams. And that means when you have really great players that play in Seattle or that play in Pittsburgh or that play in what was Oakland, I'm not sure it commands the same national attention because people aren't paying attention to these teams. And so it undercuts your ability to create star. Your star power to sell has to be in Chicago, L.A., New York, Houston.
It's funny because one of my friends was texting me about the people that are in it, and he was like, Brent Rooker? Who the heck is Brent Rooker? But right. If you actually look at his numbers, he's having a pretty good year.
Yeah.
It's just that he's on the A's and no one talks about the A's.
No one pays attention. And that's because it's become a regional – it's a regional local sport, right? Yankees fans watch Yankees games. Cubs fans watch Cubs games. I get it. Baseball's got to create a system where there's enough star power and team parity that some of those games become relevant if it's not your team. All right. Thanks to Keem Dermish, my guy from CBS Sports HQ. Great work from Nico Scarlatos. My name is Bill Ryder. Thanks so much for listening. That show flew by. We'll do it again tomorrow here on the Infinity Sports Network.